Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. On Sunday, President Biden held a meeting with Turkish President Erdogan on the margins of the G20 summit. During their meeting, President Biden raised concerns about Turkey's possession of the Russian S-400 missile system, emphasized the importance of respect for human rights, and called for the countries to cooperate more and handle disagreements effectively. Going into the meeting, President Erdogan had also stressed that he would raise the issue of Turkey, which was kicked out of the F-35 program, purchasing F-16s from the U.S. Expert Stephen Cook joins The Greek Current to analyze the Biden-Erdogan meeting and the broader challenges in U.S.-Turkish relations. Stephen Cook is the Eni Enrico Mattei Senior Fellow for Middle East and Africa Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. Stephen, welcome back on The Greek Current.
It's a pleasure to be back with you.
Stephen, this meeting between President Erdogan and President Biden took place after we saw tensions increase over the last weeks when President Erdogan threatened to expel 10 Western ambassadors, including the U.S. ambassador. It also came after Erdogan failed to get a meeting with President Biden on the sidelines of the UNGA at the end of September. Can you give us some context on U.S.-Turkey relations leading up to this meeting and why this was a meeting Erdogan wanted?
Yeah, well, I think you hit on some of the highlights. President Erdogan traveled to New York for the UN General Assembly meeting, and he didn't get a meeting with President Biden. He had hoped to. Everybody wants to get a meeting with the U.S. president during UNGA. But the U.S. president's a busy guy, and he had a domestic political agenda that he needed to attend to. And so Erdogan was unable to get a photo op. Erdogan also had wanted to meet with figures like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, and those meetings didn't materialize either. So the word on the street was that he was very unhappy with the way in which his trip to New York had gone. And then shortly thereafter, he went and met with Vladimir Putin in Sochi, where they discussed Syria and areas of cooperation, including Erdogan, while he was still in New York, implied that he might be interested in buying additional S-400 air defense systems, after telling Margaret Brennan from CBS's Face the Nation that, you know, his relationship with Biden isn't great. At the same time, the Turks sent a letter of request for 40 new F-16s and upgrade kits for additional 80 F-16s. There's some controversy whether the administration told them to do this, or this was at their own volition, or whether they were hearing only what they wanted to hear. But this has been met with some controversy as well. The administration's been very mum on this potential sale, and members of Congress are gearing up to oppose what's happened. And then, of course, you had the Turkish threat to throw 10 Western ambassadors out of the country for their advocacy for a Turkish philanthropist named Osman Kavala, who's been in a Turkish jail for more than 4 years on charges that the European Court of Human Rights say are absurd, and he shouldn't be in jail. So Kavala remains in jail, but, you know, there was a threat. No one knew what was going to happen for a while. And then the 10 embassies came up with a joint statement saying that they don't interfere in the internal affairs of Turkey. And this was good enough for Erdogan. But of course, the Turkish foreign minister kind of took some victory laps on this, saying, you know, we showed them and they backed down, and it's all very childish. So that was the kind of unpleasant environment surrounding U.S.-Turkey relations in the run-up to the G20 meeting, where Biden and Erdogan met on Sunday.
Let's get into their meeting, and I want to kick off with a look at the F-16 issue, which you briefly mentioned. Following its expulsion from the F-35 program after its purchase of Russian S-400 missiles, Turkey is now seeking to purchase U.S.-made F-16s and modernization kits for its aging fleet of jets. Now, Erdogan stated that he would raise this issue with President Biden, and a senior Biden administration official was reported as saying that the president was very clear with Erdogan that there is a process such sales need to go through. What does this tell us about how the administration looks to handle this issue? Is it kicking it over to Congress?
Yeah, I think even if the administration really was interested in advocating for this sale, and we don't know, you know, there are actually some mixed signals coming from different places, but even if there were, a sale of this magnitude has to go through Congress. And it is by just dint of the fact that the Turks bought the S-400 and were kicked out of the F-35 program. And this is their fallback. They want something for their money. So they want F-16s. And it would end up being a significant amount of money, more money than that they've already spent on the F-35. And so I think what the Turks are counting on is that senators and members of the House from districts where the F-16 would be built for Turkey would be very supportive of this sale. But again, there's a sticking point, and that's called the S-400. The Turkish acquisition of these planes would be done by an entity that is sanctioned under CATSA. So already in the letter, it warns Secretary Blinken that any effort to find a workaround around the Presidency for Defense Industries, which is the sanctioned entity in Turkey, would be considered an effort to circumvent U.S. law and would be subject to further legislation. So it's going to be a heavier lift than I think the Turks are making out to be. I mean, you know, some of the things that Turks were saying was that, oh, well, Biden was enthusiastic and Biden wants to work with Congress. I think the readout from the American side is very, very clear that Biden's position is, look, we'd like to help you, but there's a process here. And I think that the readout also made it clear that the United States' position on S-400 didn't change. So I think when, you know, the kind of positive Turkish spin is the case of the Turks kind of hearing only what they want to hear. President Biden says, well, sure, I'd love to help you, but they focus on the I'd love to help you rather than the buts and the very fact that there's an S-400 that's been deployed in Turkey.
Stephen, last week, Pentagon officials met with representatives of Turkey's defense ministry in an effort to resolve the dispute over Turkey's expulsion from the F-35. The Pentagon said that, you know, I'm going to quote them, the meeting demonstrates the commitment of the U.S. government to conclude respectfully Turkey's prior involvement in the F-35 program. How should we read into this statement by the Pentagon? Does it make it clear that the U.S. views Turkey's expulsion from the program as definitive?
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's my understanding. It strikes me that this team is, it was always going to be a significantly difficult process to unwind the Turks from the F-35 program. Because not only were they purchasers, they were involved in the manufacture of components of the F-35. But there's nothing in that statement which suggests that, well, we'd like to bring the Turks back into the F-35 program. One could imagine some sort of resolution to the S-400 and then it being even difficult then to bring the Turks back into the F-35 program after unwinding them and there being different supply chains and so on and so forth. But when I say imagine, it really is imagine because it's very hard to see a pathway in which President Erdogan gives up the S-400 now, given what a big deal they've made of it. Politically, it would be very, very hard. And this S-400 really gets in the way of Erdogan's much vaunted pragmatism. So I think they are out of the F-35.
In addition to their discussions on the F-16, the White House readout from the meeting notes that President Biden underscored his desire to maintain constructive relations, expand areas of cooperation, and effectively manage disagreements. And in tweets after their meeting, we saw that Biden and Erdogan agreed on the formation of a joint mechanism to strengthen bilateral ties. Can you help us read between the lines here?
I mean, we have had in the past all these working groups with Turkey to work out our differences, to strengthen bilateral ties. And I once put it to an American official, I said, do we have these kinds of working groups with other strategic partners? Do we have working groups with the Brits, with the French, with the Germans, the Israelis, the Australians, the Canadians? You know, if you need to have all of these working groups to work out your problems, it strikes me that the relationship really isn't a strategic one. It strikes me as one that's actually difficult. And it leads me to conclude something that I have written and said over and over again. Sure, Turkey is a big and important country, and you want to have good relations with that country. In places where you can cooperate, you should cooperate. In places where the juice isn't worth the squeeze, get out of each other's way. In the places where the Turks are actively opposing you, the United States needs to oppose Turkey. It's, you know, a kind of normal relationship. But this is a kind of tried and true thing in the Turkish-American kind of dance. And no one really wants to kind of face up to the reality of where this relationship is, which has been diverging because of the overarching strategic rationale for it no longer exists, which was the Soviet Union. No one really wants to just kind of face up to it. So let's have a working group to figure out our differences. Well, we know what our differences are. They want to keep the S-400. They want us to extradite Fethullah Gulen without providing the evidence necessary. No one's saying he's not guilty. They just need to provide the evidence. They want us to give up our support for the YPG. Well, who's going to fight ISIS in Syria then? Not Turkey. So it's these differences are clear. I don't know how you go about bridging them. These are really kind of core differences. The S-400, what's the working group going to sit down and say? Like, hi, it's nice to meet you. We're here to work out the differences. Get rid of the S-400. No, we can't do that. That's going to be a really short working group meeting.
Another issue between the two countries has been that of human rights. And President Erdogan recently stated that President Biden had never raised the issue of human rights with him during their previous meeting. This time around, we saw the White House emphasize that Biden raised the importance of strong democratic institutions, respect for human rights, and the rule of law. Is this a positive sign for those who hoped that the Biden administration would take a more forceful approach on human rights vis-a-vis Turkey?
Yes and no. That has been the talking point from Turkish officials, that no one from the Biden administration has raised the issue. Well, now we have this readout that says that the president actually raised it. That's a good thing, but it doesn't seem to be what, you know, critics and democracy activists and Turkish opposition would like to happen. I think the president was basically acknowledging that he's aware that Turkey isn't much of a democracy and raised the issue of human rights. I don't think that there's any expectation that Turkey is going to change or that the United States really has something that it can use to alter this situation. There's alleged to be a big democracy summit hosted by the United States. Word on the street here in Washington is that the Turks won't be invited. We'll see what happens. But I think it was important for raising it. But if you go back and look at readouts from other presidential conversations with Erdogan over the years, they have raised it, but nothing has changed. That doesn't mean that the administration isn't interested in this issue. It's, I think, they're bereft of a policy response to it. And that's the problem, quite frankly. That's the problem with declaring that you have a values-forward foreign policy. It raises the expectation that in each and every meeting or in each and every incident, you are going to raise the issue of a given country's human rights record. But there are other considerations that go into these relationships. So in Egypt, for example, this past summer, the president had been avoiding the Egyptian president. But with the conflict in Gaza and the Egyptians being helpful in securing a ceasefire, the president had to talk to President Sisi, and human rights didn't come up. I think it's a similar kind of dynamic with President Erdogan. Of course, the difference, it strikes me, is that the Turks have been much more difficult to deal with than the Egyptians. And the Egyptians have been difficult to deal with, don't get me wrong.
Stephen, ahead of their meeting, a U.S. official said that Biden would warn Erdogan that any precipitous actions would not benefit U.S.-Turkish relations and that crises should be avoided. Aside from the issue with the 10 ambassadors, we've also seen concerning moves by Turkey in the East Med over the last years, but also in Syria recently. And in fact, there are concerns about a new incursion into Syria by Turkey. And many in northeast Syria or Rojava were waiting for the outcome of this meeting, since a new Turkish operation would be difficult without a Russian or U.S. green light. What do we know about how Syria featured in the meeting, and what message do you think President Biden passed on to Erdogan on this?
I took the comment about warning Erdogan about, you know, precipitous actions or whatever the exact quote was from the unnamed U.S. official as really related to the kerfuffle over the ambassadors. I didn't see it as related to Syria. I could be wrong, but what jumped out at me and said, okay, this is basically telling Erdogan this was inappropriate and not appreciated. You don't go tossing ambassadors out of the country. Even though we were adults and we climbed down and we said, okay, you know, whatever, we wanted to avoid a crisis over ambassadors. On Syria, I don't think that the Turks feel that they need a green light from the United States. We don't have enough forces there. We have 900 people kind of spread over a large area. I think he needs to coordinate with the Russians. And that's, I think, a heavier lift for Erdogan, because the Russians in the Syrian regime are growing impatient and would like to deal with the Idlib problem as best as they possibly can. I do suspect, however, that if the Turks do go into northeastern Syria and there is a big fight with the YPG, the United States will cave. We won't do much.
Stephen, thanks for joining us on The Greek Current again.
Thanks.
In other news, on Monday, Congressman Chris Pappas, alongside Representatives Bilirakis and Maloney, led 41 House members in a letter to Secretary of State Antony Blinken opposing U.S. plans to sell Turkey F-16s and demanding information from the State Department following recent reports of a request from Turkey to purchase 40 F-16 fighter jets and dozens of modernization kits for its warplanes. Representative Bilirakis said, "Erdogan continues to violate American law, which alone makes Turkey ineligible for new F-16s. But beyond his violation of CATSA, he also acts contrary to American interests, with his dangerous behavior contributing to the instability of the region. For all these reasons, we absolutely should not sell Turkey F-16s." Finally, Prime Minister Zoran Zaev announced his resignation late on Sunday following the heavy defeat of his governing Social Democratic Union in North Macedonia's local elections. The conservative opposition group VMRO DPMNE claimed victory in most of the country's municipal ballots in the second round of voting on Sunday. "I take responsibility for these developments. I resign from the post of prime minister and party president," Zaev said at a press conference. Zaev came out against early national elections, saying he will support a Social Democrat-led government under a new leader, while the leader of North Macedonia's conservative opposition is calling for an early parliamentary election. Zaev has led North Macedonia since 2017. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.